Today is Friday, August 13th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, panic in Kabul as Taliban set sights on the capital.
The mood in Kabul right now is extremely anxious. Reports of Taliban taking over coming in by the hour.
Plus, uncertain and dangerous times for Afghan refugees in Turkey.
Despite the danger, as Taliban forces take towns, cities, and villages in Afghanistan, families are flocking to the borders.
Also, militants in Mali kill dozens near Burkina Faso and Niger borders. Our top story today is in Afghanistan. The Taliban have captured three more provincial capitals in Afghanistan, completing their sweep of the country's south. The lightning offensive is gradually encircling Kabul just weeks before the U.S. is said to officially end its two-decades war. The latest significant blow was the loss of the capital of Helmand province on Friday. American, British, and Allied forces fought some of the bloodiest battles there in the past 20 years. The insurgents have taken 18 of the country's 34 provincial capitals in recent days. That include the country's second and third largest cities, Herat and Kandahar. The Taliban now controls more than two-thirds of Afghanistan, just weeks before the U.S. plans to withdraw its last troops. The United States is deploying 3,000 troops to the airport in Kabul to help evacuate the U.S. embassy in Afghanistan. As VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sen reports, some observers are drawing comparisons to the U.S. evacuation of its citizens from Vietnam on April 30, 1975.
With the Taliban taking over more provincial capitals each day this week as Afghan security forces surrender, the U.S. State Department made this announcement Thursday. State Department spokesperson Ned Price.
Accordingly, we are further reducing our civilian footprint in Kabul in light of the evolving security situation. We expect to draw down to a core diplomatic presence in Afghanistan in the coming weeks. In order to facilitate this reduction, the Department of Defense will temporarily deploy additional personnel to Hamid Karzai International Airport. Secretary Blinken, together with Secretary Austin, had an opportunity to speak with President Ghani to coordinate our planning earlier today. Let me be very clear about this. The embassy remains open, and we plan to continue our diplomatic work in Afghanistan.
At the Pentagon briefing, Press Secretary John Kirby gave more details, saying the first movement of U.S. forces to the region will consist of three infantry battalions.
Those three infantry battalions will comprise approximately 3,000 personnel, and they will be in addition to those troops that are already in Kabul in the process of conducting our drawdown. So we still have more than 650 troops in Kabul right now. These 3,000 will join them there.
Asked what message this drawdown of diplomatic personnel sends to the people of Afghanistan, Price said it is not one of abandonment. But some American military veterans and other observers say this rapid retreat reminds them of the humiliating evacuation of the last Americans from the embassy rooftop in South Vietnam on April 30, 1975, as Saigon fell to communist forces from North Vietnam. Just 1 month ago, President Joe Biden strongly rejected any comparison.
The Taliban is not the North Vietnamese army. They're not remotely comparable in terms of capability. There's going to be no circumstance where you see people being lifted off the roof of an embassy in the United States from Afghanistan.
Biden has repeatedly said there is no military solution to the decades-old war in Afghanistan and has praised U.S. forces for accomplishing their mission of defeating al-Qaeda and killing its terrorist leader, Osama bin Laden, in 2011. Biden said it is now up to Afghans to fight to defend their country against the Taliban. State Department spokesman Price refused to say whether the U.S. embassy in Kabul will stay open in its present location or move to the airport, potentially to be guarded by U.S. troops. Cindy Sane, VOA News.
The deployment of American troops to bolster the defense of the embassy and evacuation of citizens and diplomatic staff has triggered fear and panic in Kabul of the capital's imminent fall. For more on the rapidly changing situation, I spoke with VOA's Aisha Tanzim.
The mood in Kabul right now is extremely anxious. Reports of Taliban taking over and coming in by the hour, not by the day anymore. So, for example, in the last 24 hours, Taliban have taken over four or five more provincial capitals, and the number of provincial capitals by some accounts has gone on to 18. I mean, 15 are confirmed. There may be some fighting, but some pro-Taliban accounts are saying that they've taken over almost 18 provinces in the country, or provincial capitals at least. So if you look at the map of Afghanistan, they're coming in from the north, they're coming in from the south. And so the expectation in Kabul is that the city will be surrounded very, very soon. So the mood is really somber. Everybody that I know is shell-shocked. Everybody is thinking of ways to get out of here as soon as possible. There's a lot of anxiety.
What is the government's reaction to this dire prediction from almost everyone that Kabul will fall in a minute?
The government right now seems out of its depth. There was a time when the government was either denying or confirming the fall of a provincial capital. It has stopped doing that. Until yesterday, the military spokesman was issuing tweets of how many Taliban they had killed in various operations. I have not seen any of his tweets today. Well, Friday is also a day off in Afghanistan. But when we are calling officials to confirm something, a lot of the times they're either not picking up or not responding. So my impression from this is that the government right now is literally, as I said earlier, out of its depth. It doesn't know what to do. Everyone, even other governments in Afghanistan, other embassies, nobody expected provinces to fall, literally fall so quickly, and for Taliban to be at the gates of Kabul so quickly. Everybody was expecting this to take some time, a couple of weeks, if not a couple of months. The Taliban started taking provincial capitals last Friday, and literally in 1 week, they've taken over 18. That's something.
What about the deployment of American forces, 3,000? Does that help raise morale, or it's just another sign that maybe the beginning of the end for the government?
It has actually done the opposite of raising morale. It has really dampened morale quite a bit. Everybody thinks the U.S. is evacuating and closing down its embassy. Some people I saw online are equating it to the U.S. withdrawing from Vietnam. Well, in this case, people are saying, well, the U.S. said they would leave several hundred of their military to secure the embassy. If they're not doing that, if they're just evacuating as many people as possible from the embassy, then they know something that we don't know, and that probably means Kabul is going to fall soon. That's the impact of this decision. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. I'm just saying that's what people are feeling. On top of it, there was a New York Times story yesterday that said that American negotiators are trying to negotiate with the Taliban that in case they take over Kabul, they should not attack the embassy. So the two news combined has not had a good effect in Kabul. Everybody's taking it as a sign that America thinks Kabul is going to fall very, very soon.
That's VOA's Aisha Tanzim speaking with me from Kabul. As families flee Taliban forces overrunning much of Afghanistan, some refugees say their escape from certain death has left them with an uncertain and dangerous future. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports from Van in Turkey.
These are the bodies of unknown men, women, and children who died trying to flee war, persecution, and extreme poverty. They were found in border areas of Turkey or amid the wreckage of broken boats on the shores of Lake Van, a popular people-smuggling route. Despite the danger, as Taliban forces take towns, cities, and villages in Afghanistan, families are flocking to the borders, and many are crossing Iran to seek refuge in Turkey. In Taliban-controlled areas, they say, anyone associated with the Afghan government, a foreign company, or identified as an ethnic Hazara is in danger of being murdered. Farid Barekzai, a former army commander, says the Taliban asked him to join, and when he refused, he was advised to flee before he was killed.
It's a disaster in Afghanistan, and it's getting worse. So many provinces have been taken over by the Taliban.
Ongoing battles have closed schools and businesses in many places, and refugees say Taliban fighters are already enforcing their draconian version of Islamic law.
We receive lots of threats and attacks by the Taliban. Many of our friends and teachers from our university were killed.
In this crowded apartment, other families say women and girls in much of Afghanistan are already living as they did in the 1990s, when the Taliban controlled the country.
Even now, women can't go out to the bazaar or for education. It's not secure.
But families who flee to Turkey have no access to humanitarian aid or a clear route to any kind of legal status. Along the way, they risk being captured, detained, beaten, or worse. Many are deported not long after they arrive in Turkey. Berekzai and his companions are not sure where they can go to be safe, so they are attempting to walk about 1,500 kilometers to Istanbul. He says if he had known then what he knows now, he may never have come.
It would be better to die in my homeland. There were just too many threats, but I thought going to Istanbul would be easy. But it's dangerous and the families face misery and humiliation.
But they say there is no way they can afford to reverse the trip. And even if they did, they would likely be kidnapped or arrested on the way. The only direction they can go now, they say, is forward. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Van, Turkey.
This is the Voice of America. Police in southwest England say six people were killed, including the suspected shooter, in the city of Plymouth in a serious firearms incident, unquote, that wasn't terror-related. Devon and Cornwall police said in a statement on Twitter late Thursday that several other casualties were receiving treatment following the shooting. They declared a, quote, critical incident, unquote, but did not provide details of what occurred in the Caham district of the city. The United States says it's sending a special envoy to Ethiopia as the fast-moving conflict in the Tigray region has spread into neighboring regions, and Ethiopia's government call on all able citizens to stop the resurgent Tigray forces, quote, once and for all, unquote. The widening war in Africa's second most populous country, with 110 million people, is also a growing humanitarian crisis.
This is Science in a Minute.
Even the most prolific songwriters can get severe writer's block when it comes to developing lyrics for a song. A team of researchers from Waterloo University in Ontario, Canada, say they have developed a new system that uses artificial intelligence to provide the help songwriters may need to write their lyrics. Called Lyric Jam, the creators of the system say it relies on different characteristics of the instrumental music fed into it, like its rhythm, chord progressions, and instrumentation. From these aspects of a song's music, the system creates lyrical lines that reflect its mood and emotions. Lyric Jam's creators point out that their system doesn't actually write songs, but it provides creative inspiration that the composer can use in penning a song. If you're a songwriter and want to try out Lyric Jam, go to the system's website, lyricjam.ai. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The UN Refugee Agency is calling for international support to help hundreds of thousands of Afghan civilians fleeing the intensified fighting precipitated by the U.S. and NATO troops' withdrawal from the country. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The breathtaking speed at which Taliban insurgents have taken control of most of Afghanistan has caught international and domestic observers by surprise. It also has left UN and other humanitarian agencies ill-prepared to assist the hundreds of thousands of people displaced and left unprotected by the escalating conflict. The UN Refugee Agency says it is alarmed by the unfolding humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan. It warns of a record number of civilian casualties this year if there is no significant de-escalation of violence. UNHCR spokeswoman Shabia Mantou calls the situation dire and says the impact of the conflict on women and girls is particularly worrisome. She says women and children account for a staggering 80% of the nearly 250,000 Afghans who have fled their homes since the end of May.
Displaced civilians are talking about extortion by non-state armed groups, the presence of improvised explosive devices on major roads, and also, you know, right, just generally rising insecurity. But we're also seeing the number of civilian casualties really spiraling alarmingly, and an increasing proportion of women and children are among those that are targeted.
Ongoing fighting is reported in 33 of Afghanistan's 34 provinces, and Kandahar, the country's second largest city, has now fallen to the Taliban. Mantu says most of those forced to flee remain within the country, as close to their homes as fighting will allow. She says few people so far have sought asylum in neighboring Pakistan and Iran. But given the evolving crisis in Afghanistan, she notes that could change. Therefore, she says the UNHCR is urging neighboring countries to keep their borders open.
An inability to seek safety may risk innumerable civilian lives. In the context of generalized insecurity in many parts of Afghanistan, it is increasingly clear that Afghans outside the country may have international protection needs. UNHCR calls for all states to ensure that they are able to seek safety regardless of their current legal status.
Mantu says the UNHCR and its partners are providing humanitarian assistance to nearly 400,000 displaced people. Among their most critical needs, she says, are food, shelter, hygiene, and sanitation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Militants in Mali have massacred more than 50 villages near the borders with Burkina Faso and Niger. The area has seen increasing violence from armed Islamists, and activists are calling on authorities to act. Annie Risenberg reports from Bamako.
Al-Mahdi Cisse is a coordinator of the collective Sanghoi Chawarabatu, a group of organizations representing the Sanghoi people, who make up most of the inhabitants of the Gao region, where the attacks occurred. He said through a messaging application from Bamako, the assailants shot at everything that moved, including those leaving the mosques and those returning to the village from the fields. Chawarabatu has called on the Malian government and the international community to secure the area and to disarm militants in a release statement. We can't understand how a locality like Karu, like Wataguna, he says, where the military camps are not even 18 kilometers away, that massacres are happening and there are not reinforcements. There are no prosecutions. We do not understand. Since a Tuareg rebellion and coup in 2012, Mali has seen both chronic political instability and increasing Islamist violence. Ali Untine, an independent UN expert on human rights in Mali, said through a messaging application from Dakar that Islamist groups are exploiting local mineral resources, mostly gold, and are able to finance themselves. With funds and control of the local area, which is largely inaccessible by the state, they gain credibility among the local population. In reality, he says, we have, little by little, a state within the state, or two states within the state, and that is a real threat for the Malian state, for the survival of the Malian state. Mali's neighbors, Niger and Burkina Faso, are also plagued by violence from Islamist groups. The same day of the attacks in the Gao region, suspected jihadists attacked Burkinabe troops near Mali's border. 30 civilians were also killed in attacks in northern Burkina Faso last week. Tin says the Sahel needs a regional strategy, focused on all of the affected countries in the Sahel and West Africa. The problem isn't just Mali, he says. We can't just fix Mali with a national security response. We can't do this for Burkina Faso nor Niger. He says what must be made is a regional strategy, with Africans that will cover the region and who are supported, this is important, supported by the international community. VOA attempted to talk to Malian authorities for this story, but they did not make themselves available for comment. Elections in Mali are scheduled for February 2022. Tin says the insecurity in Mali's center and north remains the top priority for the transitional government. Annie Risenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
The extreme hot weather in the Mediterranean region is continuing to trigger wildfires, with dozens of people killed in Algeria, Greece, Italy, and Turkey in recent days. Henry Ridgewell has more from London.
At night, the hills of southeast Sicily are lit up in flames, a frightening spectacle for the residents of these ancient mountain villages. The weather system, nicknamed Lucifer, has unleashed record high temperatures and triggered huge wildfires across the Mediterranean. A weather station in southeast Sicily registered what could be Europe's highest ever recorded temperature Wednesday, 48.8 degrees Celsius. Forests and fields sun-baked to tinder take little to ignite. A discarded cigarette even a shard of glass magnifying the sun's rays. Giovanna Likitra, a resident of the town of Gieratana, said, "We are living through some really sad moments because our land has suffered a very serious loss and it will take a long time before it returns to its former glory."
We are living through some really sad moments because our land has suffered a very serious loss, and it will take a long time before it returns to its former glory.
On the Greek island of Evia, the air is filled with acrid smoke, punctured by the low-flying sorties of water-dropping aircraft. Fire crews have travelled from across Europe to help, and as far away as Russia and Egypt. But for many residents, it's too late. Evia resident Dimitris says, "Today we have a lot of water-dropping aircraft, but they should have been here from day one. The damage now is too big, unfortunately."
"Today we have a lot of water-dropping aircraft. They should have been here from day one. The damage is now too big, unfortunately."
The heat has also triggered huge fires in Algeria, killing at least 65 people. Aid agencies say over 600 families have been made homeless. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Astronauts aboard International Space Station hold unsanctioned Summer Olympics. Plus, Perseverance comes up short and a pizza delivery that's out of this world. VOA's Arash Rabasadi has the week in space.
Aboard this Northrop Grumman Cygnus cargo ship rides precious cargo for the crew of the International Space Station. 3,700 kilograms of food that includes perhaps most importantly a pizza kit for the seven astronauts on board. Of course, Cygnus brought other things like a mounting bracket for solar wings and a slime mold for a French experiment called Blob, but you might sum up Northrop Grumman's 16th NASA supply run in two words: pizza delivery. And not a moment too soon, as the ISS crew likely worked up an appetite in this week's unsanctioned Space Olympics. The crew split into two teams, Soyuz and Dragon, and competed in zero-gravity games like synchronized floating and gymnastics. No word from NASA if anyone meddled. Looking deeper in space, NASA Mars rover Perseverance, or Percy for short, definitely did not win a medal this week for collecting Martian rock samples. Percy rolled according to plan and bored a hole nearly 3 centimeters in diameter, but the sample tube was empty. Scientists at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, or JPL, say the rock was not robust enough to get a good sample. But like any champion in waiting, Percy and her team will keep trying, in this case, by finding a new dig site. Also from Mars, or rather above it, comes this image snapped by Percy's travel buddy, the Ingenuity helicopter. Look closely and see if you can spot Percy. I couldn't either, but the team at NASA's JPL kindly included a zoomed-in image that shows the rover near the top of the frame. Scientists say Ingenuity's travel photos make way for a new game they play called Where's Perseverance? Meanwhile, mixed news this week for those of us on Earth. Scientists fine-tuned the path of the asteroid Bennu and found the odds of it hitting our home planet are much higher than previously thought. That said, chances are still very low. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
No racial or ethnic group dominates for people under 18 in the newly released 2020 census figures. In the overall U.S. population, white people declined in numbers for the first time on record, and Hispanic and Asian populations boomed over the past decade. These were some of the findings from Thursday's 2020 census data release, which will be instrumental in redrawing the nation's political maps. The data showed there's now no major racial or ethnic group for people under 18. The figure also showed the share of the white population fell from 63.7% to 57.8%. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great weekend.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we will celebrate the records, the medals, and the victories of Africa's greatest athletes at the Tokyo Olympics. We'll also look at what it would take to bring the Summer Olympics to Africa. We'll examine what kind of investment would be needed and whether Africans really want to host the Games. Join me, Heidi Adams, on the next Straight Talk Africa. this Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
Stay informed and up to date Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC with VOA's International Edition. Our correspondents bring you the news from around the globe, plus we delve into the context of the day's biggest stories with interviews with experts that place the story into context to understand why it matters. VOA's International